Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm very pleased to be here. I'm grateful to all of you for your presence here. My dear friend, how can I help?
It has been suggested that a number of us are interested in the matter of health and sickness, perhaps why these things happen and how we might deal with it most effectively.
Is this an appropriate topic for discussion? Well, I will start at the top. I will present to you my deepest feelings about this situation and then ask you to realize that I will then speak in what I hesitate to use these words, but a descending order of awareness. Because as you are all very aware, you always come in on deep truth wherever your consciousness is at that moment. But I would like to present to you what I consider to be the highest teaching in the realm of illness and health, and ask that no matter where you place yourself, that eventually at some day, at some time, you allow yourself to think deeply on this highest realm, because it is where your freedom lies. To those of you who have bodily concerns, I would ask that as deeply as you are able to, you present to your mind the statement, you are not the body. You are not the body. Now, how is that practical for someone who is filled with pain and difficulty? You must make a choice, my friends. You must make a choice. If you believe me when I say to you, you are not the body, then, if you truly believe me, you will not concern yourself with the secondary problem, which is your illness. Do you see? If you believe that as I speak it, if you truly take that into your mind and say, I sense truth, then you will not need to say, how do I take care of my bodily ills? Do you understand? It depends on whether you believe it when you hear it. All right. If it becomes too hot in here, would you please be kind enough to speak it out so we can take care of the situation? We were speaking about illness, disease, health, such related subjects. And I was asking anyone who is truly concerned with the matter of health to try to hold one focus, which is this. The great ones, the very greatest ones, have always claimed with the deepest awareness of their heart, thou art not the body. Thou art not the body. The illusion is very strong. I grant you, my friends, the illusion is very strong. But you will never free yourselves from this illusion until you begin to take seriously the great words, until they become something much more than words on a page that is heard in the mind. If you ever wish to be free, you must begin to be serious about this thing of freedom. And the main focus at this point is to continue to destroy, in whatever way is available to you, the illusion of I am a body. Illness is the greatest tool of the ego to keep you continually, utterly, hopelessly entrapped in the illusion that you are a body. Because obviously you are a body. Look at you. You ache. You hurt. Your mind dwells on it endlessly, endlessly. How wonderful. How convenient for the ego. I understand that it is almost cruel for me to speak this way, because when you are in physical pain, I deeply understand and have a deep rapport with the aches that you're experiencing. But I also know this. I would challenge you, all of you who have physical illness, I would challenge you to take that seriously in this term, in this way. Let us say that you are filled with pain. There is a physical difficulty. Before you run to the doctors, before you do any such thing, I would ask that you make an experiment. Take yourself in a gathered condition into your room, into some place of solitude, some place that is truly your own. and begin deeply to relate to that pain. Do not allow it to escape from you. Do not allow it to go anywhere. Do not allow your mind to go anywhere. Stay holding, holding in the moment. The moment contains many things, my friends, many things. But one thing it will contain is your pain. I will grant you that. Now, let us concentrate deeply, totally, utterly, with your whole being on that pain. If you try to push that pain away, you have developed a beautiful relationship with that pain. Now there is something pushing against it. So you push and you pull and you push and you pull, and you will not be free. You are embracing it in a dualistic drama of challenge, of determination to overcome, and you are indeed engrossed. You are indeed captured. Do you understand what I'm saying? Your very attention, your very determination to rid yourself of the pain is going to keep it with you. And then you will begin a round. What will you do? Well, you'll go to the doctors, and they will give you this, and they will give you that, and then you will go back, and so on, and endless. All right. When you are in the quietude of your room, when you're in a situation where you know within your being that you are not going to reject any longer, you are going to try something new, you are going to accept. You are not going to hold out as, well, I will accept today and then tomorrow I will go to my doctor. You know, this is what humans do so often on the spiritual path. They say, well, today I will do this, but then I know in the back door I can always go to the doctor. Or, well, today I will try and do this and so, but tomorrow I know I can go and do something else. Under those circumstances, it is very doubtful that this maximum approach to illness and health is going to work for you. Because as long as you have a back door, you will take it. You will take it. So, I realize I'm asking for a very high quality. I understand that. But I know with the being within me that you are all capable of it, and I ask you to try for it. Try for it. Because you will find the freedom that comes from going into that pain and becoming totally accepting. And it is a part of you, my friends. You cannot say pain is not part of you. I mean, what are we speaking of? It is there. It is not somebody else's pain. It isn't a figment of somebody else's mind. It is yours. And just as I ask you to embrace all of yourself, I ask you to consider embracing that very thing that everyone always tells you you must spend your whole lifetime running away from. You understand this clearly, do you not? You spend your whole life avoiding pain and seeking pleasure. That is the round. And if you watch carefully, it imbues you with every particle of your existence. If you're paying close attention, you will do maximum to increase your pleasure and decrease your pain. And thus goes your life. And I say to you, it doesn't matter if you have pain, my friends. Please understand that. It doesn't matter if you have pain. What matters so very much is that if you have something about yourself that you are rejecting, you will never accept it, and if you do not accept it, you will never be free, because freedom comes in total acceptance. I will not make any exception to that rule, nothing. Anything that comes to you must be accepted. Why? Because if you start into a pattern of I will accept 2, 3, and 4, and I will reject 4, 5, and 6, what have you presented for yourself? Duality. We are now caught, enmeshed, totally unable to move out of a dualistic situation. I say to you clearly, you can make no exceptions. I have told you before, I'm asking for the highest, because I know it is possible. I know it. And I ask you please to consider this. You say to me, all right, what if I have cancer? And I'm sitting there and I'm accepting this pain, and then I'm going to go out and I'm going to die. And I say, all right, die. I say, all right, die. And you say to me, no, totally unacceptable. And I say, all right, then let's move to the second stage, all right? Now, the second stage involves some very interesting things that you all know about, and here's where we come into the realm of what is now called, I can't even get your earth name for it, it doesn't matter. Then we come into the realm of trying to take care of it through positive thinking, I think would be a good way. All right, now, if that's where you find yourself, then I will give you a tool, all right? If you cannot accept, then we go to the second. Now, there's one thing that must be said about this top line of understanding. which is there's something embodied in it that you do not know yet, which is that when you are on that level, when you say, thy will be done, because that's what you're saying, thy will be done, and I make no exceptions, then you'll find something extremely interesting. The power comes, the power moves, and things are done. Are you saying to me, am I saying to you that everything then will be healed? Maybe, and maybe not. You may die. You may die. So, I leave that to you. Very harsh doctrine? Yes, I agree with you. But what you do not understand, my friends, is that when you pitch your mind to make no exceptions, none, then you are truly saying, I turn it over. I turn it all over. From the bottom to the top, it's yours. Do with it what you will. I care not. It's yours. And then the wisdom comes in, and the wisdom changes, and the energy moves, and transformations take place. And they're totally out of your hands. They have nothing to do with you. What you are saying is, I choose to believe that there is a power that can transcend my limitations and take care of them for me. And that, my friends, is the top. And I see in some of your faces, I can't do it. And so be it. No blame, absolutely no blame. But that is where I would ask you to do your best to keep your awareness that there is a state possible. And it is called total, utter, complete surrender. It means let pain come. It means let anything come. And it is an allowing. And if in that process there is a healing, so be it. If in that process there is not a healing, so be it. If you qualify it and say, well, I'll do this, but you better heal me, all right? No bargains. No bargains. And you say, but then my life will be cut short, and I would say to you quite clearly, and this is something that you do not believe, but I will state it anyway. It is already written when you will go. It is already written when you will leave this earth plane. And there is nothing you can do to change that. There is nothing you can do. It is possible. It is possible, and it has happened, that divine energy comes in and sometimes makes changes for you. Yes, I agree with that. You call it a miracle. I call it the normal flow of the one God, all right? It does happen, but that is not anything you can pray for and have come down on you. It either happens or it doesn't. It's not even up for you to think about because it's out of your control. There's nothing you can do for that. There's nothing you can do to bring that to you. So I state clearly to you that your time is written. So no matter what you do, you can go to 100 medical doctors and your time will end. You will become beautifully healed and cured and you'll walk out of the hospital and get run over by a truck. It doesn't matter. You see, you just don't have that. You think you do it. You think you are the doer. You think that you are life. And of course, in the deepest, holiest sense, you are life. Yes, you are life. But please remember very clearly, you cannot write your own destiny at this stage. You cannot do it. You cannot say, all right, God, I'm going to live for 25 more years and have him listen. You can say it all you want, but I really don't think you should count on him listening, you know, and having any kind of real response to that. But I will tell you that your fears are not grounded in reality. Because they stand for a lack of understanding. You do not understand. It is written. It will happen in God's own good time. So do what you will. Do whatever you want. But understand that there is very little that you can do to change those dynamic moments. There is very little. All right, let us go to the second level. And there is the realm of what I think is called affirmation on your earth plane. And I believe in affirmation for people who feel that this is a necessity. And I have one that I suggest to you as a maximum for health, mental and physical. I have told it to you before, and I wager most of you have not done it, but I will present it again, which is this. If you want to keep your body in maximum health, if you want your mind to reflect absolute light, I would suggest this at least once a day. In the quietude of your own being, hold the vision of yourself in perfect harmony, perfect, total, uplifting light and harmony. You wanted something? The door?
with?
An embodiment of light. If you believe what we have said before, which is that the mind creates the physical, it is the mind that creates. If you believe that, and if you feed the mind the vision of yourself as the light, then it will begin to convince the body, because this is the way it works. It is not the body that becomes ill, my friends. It is your mind. Your mind begins to think illness. All of you think illness. There isn't anyone in this room that doesn't think illness. Why? Well, why not? Everyone in the world thinks illness. And I'm asking a very strange thing. I'm saying, would you please quit believing in it? Because it is your belief that continues to tell you, yes, I can be sick. I can get sick, sick, sick. And that's how you end up living your life. Sick, sick, sick. And everybody will convince you, you have these great cathedrals called hospitals dedicated to this god of illness. Oh, it's wonderful. It takes up all of your money. Do you have any idea how much money is spent taking care of all of these things? Oh, it's a beautiful edifice. All right, that is the way of it. I do not quarrel with that. I simply say it is built because you believe it. You believe it, you perpetuate it, and so be it. If you find that you believe it, and if you find that you cannot break yourself out of it, if this doctrine is too windy and too vast and too out of the question for you, which I can understand that it might be, then let us be reasonable and let us use the mind. If you are trapped with a belief structure that says that this is so, then let us use it to maximum. By that I mean, let us use the power of your mind now to take control of this body. And by that I simply mean, allow yourself to outpicture perfect health. Perfect health. If you do it, I promise you this, if you do it with unending continuation, if you hold to it all the time, if when thoughts of illness, disease, so on, rise in your mind, throw them out. They don't belong there. You've got to make a new road. That's all it is, my friends. You know it again. I say it again. It's the same here. Please make a new road. Your mind has gone along this rut for a long time. Now it's time for a new road. And it's a very simple road. It just says this very clearly. Perfect health. And hold this. The mind creates it. Hold the body in perfect clarity of beauty, of health, of life. Those of you who are prone to depression, these are habits. Habits that are grooved deeply within your awareness, which says that when things start to happen in your world that are disharmonious to you, which make you uneasy, the pattern you fall into is despondency. And the only thing that you can do, I mean, there is no pill you can take, but there is something you can do, which is you can grab a hold of it right then, in the moment, and say, no. No. I do not choose this again. You see, if you allow these states to continue, if you allow the despondency to pull you under, you are validating your own imperception of your lack of true liberation. And you will continue to go back to that same rut, and you will be vindicated. Here I am. Of course, here I am. I'm depressed again. Oh, look at me. I'm depressed again. And over. And so you will not have to make that effort. It takes effort. I do not deny that. But I say, please try it. Please, when you feel yourself going, when you feel it slipping, when you feel the darkness, you know, the clouds begin to come and you sense and you feel and it starts to move through you and you say, no. And you can do it. You know, the sad thing about the human condition is you've bought it. You have bought the illusion so completely that it is an extremely difficult thing now to lift you up and say, oh no, you don't have to be like that. You can be like this. You can be like this. And they say, no, 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 no. I mean, I've been like this for so long. I can't be any different. Oh, yes, you can. Oh, yes, you can. Just do it. People say, I can't do it. I'm too this, I'm too that. It's too big a problem. And oh, my, my. All right, if that is your answer, then stay there. And God bless you. But if you want to change that, if you really don't feel that living like that is a maximum expression of your own divine self, then I say, get a hold of it. And you can do it. And you can do it each time. The first time is hard. The second time is a little less hard. All right? It's the same pattern. You go with it. You pick it up. You say, I don't want it. And you move. And you change. And the rut changes. And soon, instead of thinking of yourself as some depressed little mouse wandering unprotected on the face of a very negative earth plane, things will begin to change for you. They will begin to change. Nothing changes unless you want it to. It's your action. It's your belief. So, the second level is obvious. Please outpicture only light, health, balance, beauty, joy, freedom, all of it. Sense it? The limitations are gone. Everything's gone. The freedom of that moment. That is the out picture. Now, the third line you all know, and if you don't, this doctor does, which is that line which has to do with the right eating the right things and the right balance and so forth. That is the third level. Obvious, I don't need to enumerate. You all know that. And the fourth level is the medical. And it's very simple. So that is my statement about health. Are there any questions?
What is a good way of knowing where you are? Which level, you know, how do you know? That's the question that bothers me about.
What do you do when you're ill?
Well, the other night when I had pain, I noticed that I had some pain, and it was rather sharp, and I thought, I'm just not going to think about it, I'm going to think about life, and I thought life, and that's what I did, and the pain wasn't there.
All right. Good.
But I didn't relate that, I tried to relate that to the four levels that you talked about, and I couldn't relate it to it.
Well, I would say that when... And this may sound very strange. When you feel pain and you feel joy at the same time, then you're on the first level. Does that sound mysterious to you and just very outlandish? When you feel pain and joy at the same time, you see, there will come a time when everything you feel is going to be mixed with this incredible bliss. You see, you will have pain. I mean, I'm not going to say, gone, pain. No, that isn't what I'm saying. I'm saying, whatever happens to you, whatever your destiny has marked as your needful experience, you will have to take it. Yes, you will have to walk through it. No great hand of God is going to lift you out and say, no, I now save you from all of the humanness. No, you are humans and you must continue. But, my friends, at that same time, when you are in the midst of pain, when you are in the midst of sorrow over the loss of a beloved, when all of the anguishes which are yours as part of the human condition are upon you, you will know without question that there is something else there, which is the incredible bliss of the knowing of the eternal and the oneness of the totality of the gods. You cannot escape it. They will be so interwoven. And therefore, you will have this strange experience of the tears rolling down your face in pain and sorrow and your heart uplifted in joy. Do you see? It will both be there. Because you cannot buy out of the human condition, my friends. You cannot. There will be a time when you will leave, and then other options will be open to you. But here and now, you are together. You are one. The human condition is one. And I don't think most of you really would ask it to be other. Because I think you sense that there is a beauty in being a human. There is a beauty in the whole process of the humanness and the earth plane, and all of that has a great beauty. But where it becomes not beautiful is when you become so entrapped in the illusion that you have lost that feeling of the joy of life. Because life will continue in its own round. And so when you find yourself uplifted in heart and mind, and yet the tears are pouring down your face in compassion for others, in compassion for loss, in pain, in sorrow, I don't care what it is, you will still have that most incredibly wondrous feeling of knowing, and the upliftment will be so total, you will experience anything and you will not mind. Do you understand? When you get to that state, life can hand you anything and you won't care, because enmeshed in it, each moment, each instant is that same knowing of the joy of life, the joy of the life, which is, you call it life and I call it divine movement. It's the same thing. And when you sense that, when that comes up over you and washes down over you, and each moment, no matter what your destiny is unfolding, you are just so uplifted and so enraptured, and at the same time full of pain, then you will know what I'm speaking of. And perhaps it sounds very strange. I don't think it sounds too strange to some of you. You will understand what I mean, that both are possible. You know, the great gods are not going to wipe away the pain. But with one hand, you may give in pain, and with the other hand, you are given the bliss to absolutely become melded in joy and realize that all life contains that beautiful sense of joy. And it doesn't matter what happens. And that's when you're free, my friends. There is no fear. There is no fear for you when you know that. Do you understand? There is no fear. What you fear is events coming into your life that are going to overwhelm you, that are going to take you under and suck you in and make you a slave to some kind of, oh, this or that. You know, illness is a big horror for most people, or mental insanity is another one, or how many? I mean, I can think of a lot of them. And so you live your life this way, you know, pushing away. Oh, please, not that. Please, not that. I mean, I'll take a little of this and a little of that, but please, not this, not this. And then it comes up behind you and hits you over the head, and you've forgotten about the one that you haven't defended against. So you spend your whole life, you know, defending against these enemies of your peace. Well, my friends, when you realize that there is within you and available to you, I'm very glad to see you, available to you on an ongoing, continuing basis, that beautiful bliss that allows all of life to come to you in any capacity, in any situation, and you are always eternally the same because you are uplifted and joyful, then what does it matter? Then you have the martyrs who truly were able to say, I don't care. Of course it hurt. I mean, there is no illusion. There was no great hand that swept away all of the pain of the martyrs and what they had to endure. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter any more than for a great saint to go through the toils of cancer and so on. I mean, the Maharshi was one. Ramakrishna was another. They're endless, the martyrs who take upon themselves the illnesses of their disciples in order to give their disciples the chance for maximum freedom. And they take it on. And do you think they care? And do you think they weep and cry and moan? They don't care. They don't care because anything is the same. Something nice comes to them, that's all right, the bliss is there. Something evil, so-called, comes to them, that's all right, the bliss is there. It doesn't matter. And therefore, fear has no hold. You're free. Because you fight all your life against fear. Fear of the body, fear of the mind, fear of others, fear of destitution, fear of poverty, fear of, fears all over, all sides, unending fear. But when you begin to sense that, and you do know what I mean because each of you has it within you, when you begin to feel that elixir, that sweetness, that bliss, that thing that you know is there, when it begins to come up and start to permeate the strangest situations, then you'll begin to know you really are beginning to move into it. When something absolutely horrible is happening to you and all the time you're thinking, why isn't this so horrible? Why don't I feel worse? Why don't I feel all, you know, terrified? It's because you begin to know. You've started to move into the rhythm of that flow and it starts to cover you. And you can look on something absolutely abysmal and yet, and your heart goes out and you are absolutely there for that event, acting totally, freely, compassionately, wondrously in support of the needs of the moment. But at the same time, you are not overwhelmed. Do you see? If you're overwhelmed in emotion, how can you help? How can you help if you are trapped? How can you help truly another human? If you are entrapped in fear, and if you are loathsome about this event, if your feelings are totally negative about it, how can you help? This is why parents are such a mess. They are not helpful to their children. It really takes someone outside of that because they are too much with it. They are too glossed over with their emotional attachments and their desires for certain things to take place. So freedom comes when you really see, when you really know that it doesn't matter to you what happens. You stand as you are now, eternally, always, and let it come. Let it come. I mean anything. What is there to fear? If you are eternally the same, if you are always the same, then what possible difference does it matter to you what event comes into your life? How can it matter? It just cannot matter, my friends. And that is the freedom of knowing who you are. Because when you know who you are, when you know it with the totality, then it is always with you. It isn't something that is here now and then leaves. How can you leave you? I mean, what are we talking about? Can you leave who you are? Where would you go? Who would you go to become? I mean, that is not logical. You are. You are. And when you know that, then wherever you are, your knowing is there, and your awareness carries you. And all events become the same. They may be sweet. They may be sorrow. They may be pain. They may be joy. But always, eternally, there is love, there is peace, and there is joy. Always. Are there any questions?
What about when, say, your child is sick or someone you know is sick?
It is difficult, my friend. It is very difficult. And this is how I say, practice, practice now, before events overtake you. Do you understand? This is why I say to you, the reason it's now is the time, is when it's in a moment of extremity, and say your child is dying. Oh, no, this is not the time that you are going to be able to somehow amass the detachment that I'm speaking of. You know, it's not possible because of the attachment. But today, if one can begin the process of all of the things that have gone before that we have discussed together, when you begin that detachment, when you make it your daily, moment-to-moment job of being the observer and of being aware of that and of watching yourself like the hawk and realizing your attachments, seeing them clearly over and over, your attachments, and then being able to slowly step back over and over, then if a large one comes, then you're able to deal with it. There is very little, my friend, that can be done in the moment if one has not practiced a lot. Do you understand? It is almost, well, it's difficult. It's very difficult. So I would say, don't worry about it. Just begin today. With whatever capacity you have, begin your freedom now. And then, when you need it, it will be there for you. It's just like any other tool. I do feel it's quite warm. Could we open? Yes.
Are you talking about freedom from the emotions? But yet you were saying to not deny that these things, like the pain, were there.
Yes.
So we should experience the emotion.
Exactly. I mean, you cannot not experience it. There is no way that I can see on the earth plane that you can deny an emotion is happening any more than you can deny that all of the people are in this room. They are realities. And the problem with the human condition is that they try to deny things. They try to not only deny them, but turn them into something quite different. For example, they're feeling utter pain. But no, they're not feeling pain. Oh, no, everything's fine. Well, of course, everything. Do you see what I'm saying? They gloss it over. And that is not the way to freedom. The way to freedom is to understand. And you understand by observation. You must be your own observer, totally always there, closely observing. Do not deny. You know this yourself. You do not deny. You do not deny your emotions. I would simply say to you, allow them. But allow them as an observer rather than being the emotion itself. For example, it is perhaps a suggestion I would make to all of you. Instead of saying, I am in pain, to say, there is pain. And you say to me, that's a trick. I say, try it. Over and over and over again, try it. And see if something doesn't change. There is pain. There is anger. There is fear. Do you understand me? I'm saying, do not deny it. Do not say, I have no fear, I'm God. Oh, are you? I mean, do you really know that? Well, if you know that, then you're right. There is no fear, you are God. I agree with you. But I also think that such words are useless to you. Useless. Unless that is an experience that you have already understood. So I would say very clearly, keep remembering things. For example, let's even go deeper than that. There is thinking. If you watch what you're doing, you say all the time, I think, I feel, I. Watch your patterns, watch your verbal patterns, they will reflect much. The fact is, there is thinking. You are not who you think you are. You are not who you think you are. You are not what you think you are. And if you continually tell yourself you are, you will never, ever, ever be free. So please begin to say, there is thinking, there is fear, there is movement. You understand? If you keep that, if you keep that as a statement within your mind, it will begin to separate you, because you must learn to separate so that they no longer engulf, because the human condition is you wander around and then you are engulfed. It is almost as if it reaches up and grabs you and takes you down. And then the emotion is in control and you are just simply a part of that process with no freedom of action. You have lost the perception. I say again, the body and the mind are in you. If that is true, my friends, and I tell you it is true, then we have to state that there is thinking. You do not think. There is movement. You do not move. Do you understand the difference? It's just a matter of believing it. It's just a matter of wanting to believe it to such an extent that you will continually keep it in your mind. And you can only do that if you are the observer.
Are you saying my mind is still along with Gwen's, like if he had a child, and say he or she had an asthma attack, and if you don't do anything, just turn it over, if that child is meant to live, it will live, but if it's time for it to die, it will die, but if you, rather than say, take it to a doctor for a shot or for oxygen or whatever.
You have to do what you believe in. You have to do what you believe in, and which you would take them to the doctor and have a shot. You would have to do that. And do it. You see, when it comes to other people, you cannot make that judgment. You must follow the rituals. But if we are speaking of ourselves, you know, if you have children, you have to take them to the medical doctors. Yes, yes, because you would just live in guilt until you died if you didn't. So go on the route. Do it. Do it. I'm speaking of if you really want to be free within yourself, and if you want to change your attitude about illness within yourself, then you've got to begin. And when you begin to build different thought patterns, when you begin to allow things and totally surrender all things, then a whole life changes. But you cannot do that for a child. You have no way of knowing where that child is in its own understanding. You cannot do that. You must go on the established routes because you're not dealing with your own awareness, you're dealing with the awareness of the child. Now, if you have a superlative child and the child tells you itself that it doesn't need medical attention, which has happened, then so be it. And then if your fear is such that you can't believe it, then you'll have to take them to the doctor anyway. You know, but that's a rare case. People believe in doctors. They believe in illness. Humans believe in illness, greatly believe in illness. Yes.
We have spoken many times, you have told us many times about freedom. And in this case, you're speaking of the freedom from your bodily problems.
Yes.
Such as fear and pain and so forth. And
yes.
On. Is this the same freedom that you
have described? Because we need to open it to
which I believe is the total freedom, or...
Would you open the door, please?
And you push out on
push
the
out
left
on the other
hand
window.
Push out on the left hand window.
Is this freedom that we discussed the same in general as what we, what I believe the church is called, being saved, is that a similar situation?
My understanding, which may be faulty, of what the established church means by being saved is that they have had an influx of very high energy of a divine source that has changed their thoughts, that has placed a new hope in their hearts, a new bounce in their step, and their whole outlook on life is radically changed. They perceive themselves in a different, totally different and uplifted way. They feel themselves connected, usually with some great avatar, probably the Christ. Is this the thing that you're speaking of?
I have never really understood it, so I'm listening.
I perceive that this is probably what they mean. No, that is not what I call freedom. It is not. Because freedom, to me, means the perception of who you are far exceeding all of the limitations of the physical. Far exceeding all of those realms. That, to me, is freedom. And I do not sense that they mean it in that same way. I may be wrong. If I'm wrong, is this true? Is this a correct interpretation? Can I help anyone else?
When you say who you are, how big do you mean a you? You mean, on what sort of level do you feel we should concentrate when we want to really find ourselves? Because I don't feel that really I could find the total thing yet. I mean, I don't know.
The fact is that when we speak of who you really are, there is nothing that we could say that would connect up with that knowledge. Who you are and what you are is nothing that you even can dream about. All of your dreams of who and what you are not true. May I just promise you that? No matter how vast, no matter where you go, no matter what you think, if it's a thought, it isn't what it is. So, I think that I would like to say that I don't think anyone will be able to experience who they are until they stop deciding what it is. So that means a total surrender of all of your belief structure, of all the things that you've learned. It means of sitting quietly in the moment and allowing that to show itself to you. It is not something that you go to get. It is something that reveals itself in its own natural way when the circumstances are right for it. Now, you say, well, what are these circumstances? Well, that differs with everybody, and there's nothing to be said, except the only thing that you can do is to become so longing to know. The key is longing. The key is longing. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it mental discomfort. You can call it pain. You can call it suffering. You can call it heartache. I don't care what you call it. But eventually, the key is the longing. And when your heart longs, or you long so much for it, then it is exactly like it would be if you long for a lover and your mind is just totally immersed in thoughts of that lover and you can think of nothing else. When that happens, then all of a sudden the lover appears, all right? And in the same way, when you really seek truth or awareness, when you really absolutely seek it so deeply, then you can't go and get it. You can't go out and buy it. You can't get it from anybody. Nobody can give it to you, but it does reveal itself to you. It does become a revealed state of awareness. And the only thing that you can do is to just sit quietly and wait, because it will come. And in the quietude of the waiting, in the daily moment-to-moment waiting, you can wait in the midst of a thunderstorm. You can wait in the midst of a bucket of dishes. You can wait in the midst of driving a car. You can wait. Always wait. Because if you believe it's there, all the greats have said it, and I say it again. I do not mean I'm a great. I'm simply saying, I say it. It is true. It is true. It is there. It is not a fantasy. It is not a story. It is not a deception. It is true. And if you wait, it will come to you. All you need to do is to long for it. Long for it. All your days, all your nights, just long for it. And it will begin. And the process will begin and you will know. And it will become longer and longer. And then more and more you will know, and more you will feel it. And then one day you will realize the whole day and the whole night is gone, and the longing has somehow changed. The longing will turn into something different. The longing becomes the sweetness that we talk about, because the longing is the sweetness. You don't see that yet, my friends. You don't see it yet because of all the limitations you put. But the longing is the sweetness that you seek. It is not separate from that. Do you understand? That longing you feel in your being is the sweetness, and it will reveal itself in a different measure at its own due time. So stay with your longing. Don't try to put it out like a fire. You know, keep the longing. Keep it with you. Keep it as that dearest possession that you have, because it is the dearest possession that you have. Keep it with you. Always.
Well, I don't know how appropriate my
years,
but the first 35 years or so of my life were dismal and unhappy.
Yes.
And I was longing for my life.
Exactly.
How does this fit with the idea of longing?
I think it would be interesting for you to have experienced your life, and would it have happened had you not spent 30 years longing? What I'm saying is, you have no way of knowing how important the longing was to reach its ultimate fruition in you. If you had not longed all those years, it might never have come. But when it comes in its own way, in its own time, in its own form, and you have no idea what it's going to be, or when it's going to be, or when that process is going to begin itself. You have no way. All you can do is do. That's all you can do, is to do it, is to wait. Whatever is meaningful to you, do it. I don't care what it is. We say it again and again. Those of you who feel uplifted by prayer, pray. Those who feel uplifted by mantra, do mantra. Those who are uplifted by meditation, do meditation. I don't care what it is. Just do something. Just do something. Because in the doing, in the working with it, in the moving toward it, in the experiencing of it, it becomes real. It comes alive. It is, if you would, a latent power. And it begins to ignite. And I don't care what method you use. Whatever is most yours to use, use it. And all of a sudden, it's just like the old story of the lighting the fire. You try, and you try, and you try, and then all of a sudden, all of a sudden, without you even knowing how, the fire bursts into flame. And you put on matches. Which of the matches was it that ignited it? You know, which of the fuels that you threw on it did it? How do you know? Was it a combination of two of them, four of them, six of them? How many? What happened? You don't know. There's only one thing you know. It ignited. And it had, the process of burning had begun. This is the same way with this process that you're undergoing. You try everything. You know, that's what you, most of you have done all your lifetimes, is tried. You try this, then you try this, then you try that. And, oh, now I'm going to try this. Okay. Absolutely right. That is the throwing of the matches on the fire. And you have no idea which ones were those that brought the ignition to fruition. You don't know. So you simply follow that pattern of yearning. Follow your heart. Follow what you know. Follow what you want. Follow what you feel is that that's pulling towards you. And one day, one wonderful day, the combination unknown to you will go up in flames. I promise you that it works. It works. What works? They all work. They work together, they work separately, they work left, they work right, they work, because it's the same process. It's this beautiful yearning that says, I know something. I know. I know it. And I stake my life on it. And then you go, and you go, and you never stop going. And then one day, the combination is struck, and the whole thing. And you can't look back and say, oh, it was that. Ah, yes, it was that. Oh, no, you can't make such statements. Do you understand? So all of those things that you did for all those years, there's no way for you to see which ones were the perfect combination to ignite the entire situation. But I do salute you.
Previously on different tape, you had something about the sophistication of territories that each person has around them, and that in these territories, the more sophisticated the person was, the more sophisticated the territory is. Are these territories a product of your ego? And should we attempt to break them down, or could you speak on that? About the territories and what they are?
I'm having trouble because I do not recall.
I think it's the last tape.
Did I speak of territories?
Well, you just mentioned it shortly.
That the ego defends its territory.
I see. Beautiful. Yes. Everything in your world you have thought up. Everything in your world you have thought up. There's nothing in your world that you are not responsible for. Nothing. And when it comes to that immediacy of your territory, by all means you defend it. And the reason you do defend it, as you know, is because you have something you think to protect. You would never defend it if you didn't think you had something to protect. And what you're protecting is that which you think is yourself, which is your body-mind combination. All right? That's the wonderful thing that you are spending your whole life protecting, is the body-mind. And you will do anything to keep it in its own isolated space. When you speak of the ego as having created this, what is really closer to the truth is that there is an illusion at work here. And the illusion is that there is such a thing as a space around you. The whole thing is totally and utterly illusory, because if you could see with the vision that is yours someday, you would see there is absolutely no difference. There is no such thing as separation. There is only consciousness moving in its myriad forms of movement, all right? There is no such thing as stopping consciousness. Consciousness does not freeze. Consciousness does not move and then stop. It flows constantly, utterly moving, with great eddies of time-space relatedness going on and on and on and on. And what you do with your mind is you envision that you have stopped that. You feel somehow, oh yes, I've stopped it, and this is mine. And then this is mine. And then this is mine. And this is mine. And if it's mine, oh my, then comes the responsibility. If it's mine, then I have to take care of it. I have to protect it. I have to put things on it. I have to do this with it. You see, you begin this great flurry of activity because you have made the first illusion real. You have believed the first illusion, which is that you have somehow taken consciousness in its ever-flowing eddies and stopped it. Because if you could see that you could not stop consciousness, then you would know that you cannot own anything, that you cannot be anything. How can you be something that is always changing? I mean, how can you, is the be? I mean, is that what we're talking about? Humans are extremely interesting about this because they keep seeing themselves as not in motion. They see themselves as somehow solid and concrete and very definitely, you know, here. And the actual reality of perception is it's always moving. It's always undulating, moving, interweaving, changing. You know, you all think you're separate, and I wish I could do this. And you could see. Because what you would see is there is no separation. You all are of consciousness, and that is what you are. And you're creating, each one of you is creating, interweaving your realities together in this moment. This one here is not separate from that one. It is an amazing movement of energy and time, and everything is in motion. And it is very much like looking at a stream of water and saying, that bubble. I mean, you know, when you're looking at a stream of water, how are you going to keep your eye on the bubble? You know, that one. No, and there it goes, and it changes, and it melds with another, and But you see, you are so convinced that it is so stuck, so real, so definite, that then, of course, you have to, if you believe that first rising of the illusion, that is, reality is frozen, that your consciousness is frozen in any way, then therefore follows all the game plan after that. It goes on infinitely. Do you see? Once you buy that first thing, that you were able to freeze anything and make it concrete, make it stop, make it static, then out of that arises everything. Then we go on to the myriad worlds, and then you create the universes and universes beyond those universes, and then black holes so you can go to other universes, and it just goes on and on and on. You see?
So that's one of the rules of the ego?
Yes. That you are concrete, that you can stop the flow, that somehow you are not fluid, that you are not a series of events. You believe yourself to be a person, and I tell you, you are a series of events. That's what I tell you. You are a series of events that you have tried to convince yourself is a person. And I say, all right, go ahead. But when you would like to be something different, be aware, so attuned, that you will know that you are a series of events, that you will just watch the mind going. You know, the physical body is a great trap because you look at it and you say, oh, yes, it's very definite. This, you can say, is definite. Well, that's not really true. Because if you really are a master of looking at the physical body, you will realize that it changes constantly, utterly constantly. A hair falls out. A hair turns color. This happens. That happens. I mean, be realistic. You're watching the continuity and you're not paying a bit of attention to the change. The change goes on infinitely, totally, completely, and utterly. But you don't pay attention to that. Egos are very selective. They select those things that they wish to see. They select those things that they want to keep their awareness on so that they can convince themselves that indeed, yes, I am very personal. I am a person. I am concrete. I am here. This is me. You can define yourself, and that's what you wish to do. The main job of the ego is to define yourself. This is me. And if there's me, then you know there has to be someone else, and away we go. The worlds are created and on and on and on. Did I answer your question?
Partially. How can we drop the illusion of our state? We don't need to.
You see, if you're going to try and attack all of those angles, my friend, You will be here for many, many, many lifetimes. We must really, if we really seek freedom, then we must just stay with that and not allow ourselves to try and change all of the myriad forms of comings and goings. It's possible, but it would take a long time. It would take a very long time.
On the freedom.
Those of you who wish to go, please feel free to go. Any of you who are wishing to go, please.
By freedom, I'm understanding, the way I understand freedom is to know within yourself that which is always there.
Yes.
That's how I understand. Is that what you're speaking of?
That's the first stage. Absolutely, the first stage.
In other words, there's something that's always there.
That's right.
And to know that.
That's right. And then there will come a second stage. Because, you see, you're first the observer. You know, that which stands back and observes, that's the first stage. But then there comes another stage, which is when you become awareness, when you are no longer observing, but when you meld and merge into what I call awareness, then everything else takes on a different hue, but we don't really need to discuss that yet. But the first stage is to be totally aware of that which is what I call the I am, that which is the eternal ongoingness of who you are. And when you are so with that, in such a total way, every moment of every day, then other things begin to take shape.
Stay focused on that.
Yes, because that is where the detachment becomes. Once you allow yourself to go out, it's very much like all, you realize, I've said it before, you've projected it all out there. All right, now I don't ask you to go and collect all your projections and bring them back in. No, no, that's not what I say. All you need to do now is to know that you have done that. And don't stop doing it. I'm not asking, you know, for great magic tricks. There are no tricks. It's just now, instead of going out there, be back, be the observer and watch. It's just the same thing, watch the drama. The drama goes on unendlessly, and there is great fun in the drama, and there is great sorrow, and there is all of it, and it goes on and on. You know, great plays are not just those that have only fun in them. Great plays have all of the immensity of the human condition, and such as is with life, and allow it to go on. Oh yes, allow it. But when you are so attached to it that you cannot see anything but what is happening to you, you're lost. You're lost, and you're miserable, and you're full of anxiety and depression and, oh, well, all. So the first step is that detached state that allows the play to proceed, but knowing that you are that which is observing it. There is further stages, but that definitely is a major stage of awareness for most people. Yes.
It seems like at times that we're trying to describe what we're after in terms of life. We're trying to describe the water and the land. We're trying to describe something higher up in words that we use here that don't even come close to.
Exactly. Exactly.
Feeling or the state. And it seems that also that possible acts that we observe may be closer to an explanation of what we want to see, and maybe better than words, but what I'm getting to is that, and this goes back to what we said earlier, was the idea of something that seems to have happened to some of the great teachers, and stuff, the idea of intentional suffering. And I use the word intentionally to just try, what is, how does that come in to the play? Because it seems like that so many almost purposely put themselves in very harsh conditions.
Are you speaking of the harsh conditions prior to their awareness? Or
so that's what I don't understand.
All right, well, I truly mean it. If any of you wish to leave, please feel free. I realize it's rather closed in here, and there are many of you, and please feel free. What we are dealing with is a subject that the reason they picked the austere life, the simple life, was because when things are too easy for you, my friends, you can fall asleep. It is much easier to fall asleep in a feather bed than it is on a rock pile. It's just truth. I'm not asking you to run out and become, you know, cave dwellers. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that all of you who have choices in your life and you can opt for more or you can opt for less, I would ask you to consider opting for less. When it comes time to think of getting a new whatever or doing without the whatever, you might consider doing without the whatever. Because what you do is you become more and more engrossed in this pattern. And the reason that the rock pile is beneficial is it keeps you in a state of what we would call suffering. And why is it? Because it's a reminder, my friend. It's a gimmick. I use this word a lot. It's another gimmick. You could do it in the Hilton Hotel in New York City. You could, if there is such a place. You could do it there. Oh, yes. But I would think it would be easier some other place. And it is a gimmick that one uses to remind. This is why carefully selected a very difficult spot in the north for the center to come into being, because it is difficult. We could have picked a lush valley with a stream and large trees and flowering bushes, and life would be lovely, and everyone would come and sit by the river, and they would fall asleep. You see? But we cannot fall asleep up there, my friend. It isn't possible. You can barely fall asleep at night because the wind howls, and it is dusty, and it is cold, and it is hard. And it will win for those who choose it, because it will remind you, this is a reminder. Do you understand? It's simply a gimmick, a reminder that says, do you hear? Do you see it? It is so easy to fall asleep. Under the most beautiful of circumstances, you can fall asleep. And so therefore, those who sought it with the deepest dwelling need in their hearts have picked those places and those lives that were austere in that way, in order to remind themselves over and over again, this is what I want. This is what I have to have. And everything in their environment supports that understanding. Do you understand? And when it comes to taking on the sufferings and the pain of others, that is after they have transcended the wisdom of the limitation and they know that there is no duality involved. Then, for those very beloved disciples who they know are close, oftentimes they will take on their suffering, because they know that that little additional life might make all the difference. But these are rare and exalted cases, and we don't really need to deal with them.
So what you just said, then, I think it was the Japanese that had a saying, with less there is more.
Exactly. I'm not asking all of you to sell your houses and move to the Gobi Desert or whatever. I'm not asking that. I'm simply saying pay attention. Make your choices. Don't seek the easy, because in seeking the easy, you're going to fall asleep.
With that in mind, you don't worry about getting a bigger living room for our meetings, do it.
No. I salute you. I salute you, else they might fall asleep right before my very eyes. Are there any other questions? Have we gone too long?
No.
I would like to know more about communication without verbalization.
Well, real communication is not done with the mouth. Real communication is not even done with the mind. Real communication is done with what you would perhaps call the higher self, what I would call the divine harmony. And that is why the greatest communion is done in silence. The greatest communion is always done in silence. And when that doesn't work, then you try words. You know, when the deep solitude of movement, of awareness between fails, then we resort to words. Maximum would be for all of us to sit here quietly, come up with a subject of whatever, a mutual decision, and very quietly just spend an hour in solitude, and I think you would be surprised at what would happen. All minds moving toward one thought, one word, one understanding, because you see, we all have it. I mean, my consciousness is not different from yours or yours. It is all the same. And embodied in it is that which you seek. And if all seek for one, then all of a sudden it becomes one's own personal experience, and it is as if the veils have fallen and you see clearly and not a word has been spoken. Words are a step down from that which you really seek. So I feel that more and more as people become deeply aware of the limitations of the verbal forms, when they see that I say green and the other person sees green but it's not really my green, and I say cat and they say cat, I hate cats and he loves cats, and I mean, you know, cat scratch. I mean, everybody has a different cat. There's no way to work with that. But there is that level that is always and constantly there that can commune beautifully. And so I would ask those of you who really wish to communicate with someone, perhaps there's someone in your life that there's difficulties with, someone who there is disharmony with, instead of going and prattling and saying, oh, I'm so sorry, and oh my, or you did this, and why did you do that, and I wish you'd done that, and whoa, 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 on and on and on. Instead of doing that, I would suggest something, which is quiet yourself. Pose the mind deeply, utterly, clearly, and just move into that awareness, because you share that awareness with the totality of all createdness. And in that awareness will come the strength and the love that is necessary to meet all conditions of life. That is where the communion comes. You don't have to commune with the body, you don't have to commune with the mind. If you really wish to commune, you will put all those in abeyance, and you will go to that lofty area, and you will reside in it. And in that area, if you stay in it, you will know that you are one, and that all the seeming obstacles are as nothing, because that is where you are one. Do you understand me? That is where you are one. There is no one in your life that you are not in complete and total communion with. No one. I don't care how you have constructed the game, other. It is not the truth. It is not the truth. And if you continually seek to go on the mental plane and the physical plane to make your communions, then so be it, go ahead. But if you really wish to nurture and to commune and to become totally immersed in the oneness of love, of what is really that activity of the divine, which is the love, then go to that plane and forget the others and sit there. I mean literally sit there. You can sit here and sit there at the same time, because it's here. There is here. It's a state of mind, and you can reach it. Everyone in this room can reach it. Everyone in this room can reach it. It's simply that one doesn't want to, because one likes to think. People like to think. It is great fun to think. And so go on and think. But when you finally realize that thinking is not going to bring you the joy and the peace that you want, then I suggest that you quit thinking and try something else. And that is the tool for freedom. Because when you find yourself more and more moving up to that, when you more and more get into that real awareness of what that is, and it expands out and goes infinitely, and you see that there is no end to it, and then one day, that person in all the world that you most don't want to be one with, most don't want to be one with, all of a sudden, you will see that you cannot escape it. That you are one with that person, and you cannot do other. And there is a tremendous joy, because what you really want in your deepest heart, you really do want total acceptance. You want to be totally accepting, and you want to be totally accepted. And my friends, you are. You have created the game of separation. Go on and play it. But it is not true. Those of you who think that you are lonely and alone, that is your perception. And I tell you, it is not true. There is no possible way that you could be alone. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. And that is the grace. That is the grace of God. Because you cannot make yourself separate. However much you've tried, and you have tried very hard, look at it. You've tried, and it does not hold up. And there will be a day that it will fall, and you will see it, and be grateful that it is so. The divine power so wants to express itself as unity that someday it will be so.
We limit ourselves from this power by thinking the small talk for this life that we have.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. that is very true. It's just a matter of enjoying. You see, thoughts have emotional power. They have an impact. They have an energy field. And you keep going back because it gives you a, what is the word, lift. Even a very diabolical thought, if you're watching carefully, gives you a lift. You know, it's not just happy thoughts that give you a lift. Those ugly ones, they just really get things going. And it is this process that keeps you involved because you feel alive. You see, you're selling yourself short, my friends. You're buying a very phony, false, illusory life instead of life in its vastness. And this has been the bargain that you've struck, and so be it. So you play it. And go on playing it. But when you decide that you sense that life in its bold creativeness is waiting for you, when you finally wake to that and say, I'm ready now to make an exchange, then the process is very important of not allowing all of these myriad thoughts to continually fill and bubble around and ferment and then get, but it's very much like a vat. It gets larger and larger and larger, and then your whole life is filled with all of this. And then you say, no, I'm going to exclude all my negative thoughts. That's what most people on the so-called spiritual path do. The first thing is they start swimming through this great vat, and they're going to move all of the negative thoughts out. All of them. And then lo and behold, they get through all of that, and what's left? All the positive thoughts. And then these positive thoughts are not doing it either, because sitting around thinking positive thoughts does not really bring you bliss. It doesn't. It brings you positive thoughts. And it makes your life more fun. Yes, I think that life would perhaps be a lot more fun that way. Yes, I would grant you that. But it doesn't give you what your being cries out to experience. So you find that that is not doing it either. And that's when you finally surrender and say, all right, there must be something else because I know there is. I feel it. I know it. And then you start definitely seeking a way straight to freedom, the straight path to freedom. And that's when things get very serious. But one mustn't get too serious. Because if one gets very serious, then life is very boring. And people around you are very boring. You know what I mean. It gets very bored, and life takes on a very difficult hue. And then you become what I call the tragic figure. And I really don't advise that. I think that the more joy that you can do in your life for yourself and others is far more help than all this dour business. Excuse me if I offend any of you, but it's much more fun. Since you have to be here, you might as well be joyful. You might as well be positive. You might as well be sharing. You might as well be loving until such time as freedom dawns and you see clearly. It's just a lot better on those around you, but it's choices, always choices. Understand that you use your moods to control other people. You use your moods in order to control others. It isn't because you enjoy them, perhaps you do, but it's the power you have over others that you enjoy. You decide to be despondent and watch what happens. Most people around you are affected. Look how powerful you are. Oh my, here you are. You're being all gloomy, Gus, and everybody around you now is affected by what you are. It's great power. It's power. Anger is another one. Anger is a great manipulator. You use it to manipulate other people. People don't want you around when you're like that, so they try to please you, so you'll be big and smiling, and all you do is just continue to control all of your environment. And I would suggest all of you to help each other by not allowing this. Try your best not to allow other people's bad moods to manipulate your life, because you're not helping them. No, truly, it's a great service. Do not allow it, because it does not help them. It does not help them. It simply makes them believe that it can work. It just convinces them of the validity of what they're using against you. And you know, you're not against anyone. You're all one. And any aid you can give is a great help. And I would suggest that you think about that. If someone is using some manipulative power like this, you don't have to lecture them and frown and shake your finger and become very pompous. All you have to do is not participate. Don't participate. You have a choice. You don't have to leap in with them and start mucking around in it and getting all upset and excited and rude and mad and away we go. You don't have to do that. There is another option. There is another option. You simply stand back and allow them. Allow them their moods. It's not your business. It's not your business what mood they have. It's not up to you. But what is vitally important is if you can hold your center and know that you trust that the beauty of that other person will manifest if you support them in their beauty and not their negativity. It will begin to happen. Do you understand me? If you keep affirming in your own mind the beauty of that person and not the negativity, then it will start to process. It will lighten up. But if you keep jumping in and participating as a co-participant in all of this wonderful mess, all you're doing is just validating back and forth. Yes, 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 yes. Anger is terrible. Oh, it's terrifying. Look what you're doing to me. Back and forth. Don't participate. It's not necessary. Stand back, but don't stand back with arrogance and superiority. You might as well be in the pit with them. That isn't the answer. Arrogance and superiority is not the answer. That is never the answer. But compassionate detachment is the answer, and it is available if you want to use it. But the problem is, of course, it's more fun to get in the pit. Precisely, that's where the action is. Exactly. Perhaps we've gone on long enough.
Certainly, thank you.
May I say something, please?
Yes. You want to say something?
Yes.